The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Jeffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. We've seem to have got back into a bit of a routine again, which is great to hear. Back with our loyal listeners, which is wonderful. And my tour has finished, so that means that I'm more available than I have been. But it's a delight to come back to the delicious podcast, which is a great joy to me and something which I'm very proud of.
You're feeling a bit sad about finishing your tour.
Yeah, it is a little bit. It's very intense, you know, intimate. Do a theatre tour with really just four people and you. It's a very intimate experience.
Mm.
It's very, very close.
And do you have more affinity towards your actor fellows now, knowing what it's like to go on a production and then come off one?
Yes, I do. It gives me much more insight. It's very good for me in every way.
Mm.
For anybody who's an amateur, as I always called myself, it's an insight into another part of the profession.
Yeah.
I think that's fascinating. I found it really fascinating. And to work out how audiences work and how they respond and what kinds of audiences they are. And they vary from place to place, day to day, matinee to evening. It's fascinating.
Mm.
And very illuminating as well. So yes, it's been very, very exciting and very emotional.
Yeah, it's like losing a sort of family group when you finish a show, isn't it?
It is really, yeah.
I was talking to Miles about it and told him that you were feeling a bit sad, and he said that's the worst thing. So you do something and you think this is jolly nice, and then it finishes.
And you don't. Yeah, well,
and then it's done, but it's still done. No one can take it away from you.
Oh no, absolutely not.
Take the experience away.
No, you can't. I mean, look at the things that I've done.
Mm.
You know, since I reached the age of 70, really amazing, almost overwhelming, to be honest. You can't quite believe it. I can't quite believe it sometimes. You know, just the sheer strangeness. You suddenly find yourself making television programs you didn't know you were going to make, doing a theatre tour you never thought you'd do. It's slightly overwhelming, really. You know?
It's been great.
And what about your week, Mo? How's that been?
Oh, fine. Yeah, fine.
Yeah?
Not much to report. Oh,
what?
Our nice listener, Anne Muir, wrote to us, didn't she? Because we haven't told everyone what we thought about Peggy for You. We went to the theatre together.
Oh, yes, Peggy for You. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a bit dated in that it really was set in a particular time. And it's, you know, Alan Plait is a fine playwright. A lot of good thoughts in it.
Do you want to explain to the listeners what Peggy for You is about?
Peggy for You is about a literary agent, or principally a play agent, called Peggy Ramsey, who looked after many, many fine careers, most notably probably Joe Orton's, but many, many others. And she had offices in Goodwin's Court, which runs between St Martin's Lane and just in a little alleyway. And
that Italian restaurant was, is it still
that's
there?
That's right. Giovanni's is still there, yeah. It's been done up.
Hmm.
But she was in her own lifetime really a legend, who was ferocious in attacking big corporations if they tried to take advantage of her clients. She was a very steely campaigner.
And she's important to us because you used to give me books about her when I was little.
Yeah.
Well, not little.
Well, you were 16.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gave you Simon Callow's biography of Peggy Rowse.
You gave me her letters as well.
No, I did, yes. Yeah. So it was very nice to go to Peggy.
It was a really nice evening, wasn't it?
It was a very, very nice evening. I thought Tamsin Gregg was great.
She was excellent.
Yes, and it so happened that as I was leaving the Comedy Theatre, which is now called the Harold Pinter, I saw the poster for the original production with Maureen Lipman.
And then our listener Anne wrote to you and me to say that she had the programme from that original,
the original
version
programme
with Maureen Lipman.
Wonderful.
Anne also made us these amazing badges that she gave to us at CrimeCon.
That's right.
And I'm going to take some photos and put them on Instagram.
Yes, I'm so sorry, Anne. We've been remiss, but here we are. Yes,
they're really great.
So, there've been a number of those actually recently. When I was on the road with David, our company manager Alex, believe it or not, at the age of 14, had got his autograph on the same day as she's got Peggy Ashcroft's.
No.
And she brought in the autograph book.
Oh my God, amazing.
With Peggy Ashcroft on one page.
And David Suchet on the other.
Yeah.
That's wild.
She was 14.
That's so cute.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was amazingly kind of emotional, really. Sort of, it just took my breath away, really. It's kind of extraordinary way people keep things. I keep some things, but I don't keep very many. But when I was a boy, I used to keep theatre programmes because I used to go to theatre on my own a lot. And I had a big collection of theatre programmes, but like many other things, it all disappeared. They all disappeared.
Yeah. Jolly expensive.
They are.
I was thinking, because we've been neglecting our Patreon.
Yep.
I had an idea that maybe we could do, a quiz.
Cool, of course.
I thought we could do a quiz. We're going to do, this is all just in the top of my head from today.
That's all right.
We can film a quiz with you and me asking true crime questions.
Okay.
And then our Patreon members have to send us the answers.
Yes.
And then we'll do prizes and we'll film the winners and we'll think of some fun prizes to send.
Okay.
Which
sounds a great idea.
That's the plan, Patreon.
Yes,
we've
I'm sorry.
We've been severely neglecting you.
We've been neglecting you. To be fair, Molly has been very busy and so have I.
But still.
You're still busy, Mo, aren't you?
Yes.
It's in the box, but she's fine.
My busyness does not diminish.
Not diminish, no. So I can think up the questions.
True crime quiz.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be jolly fun.
Yeah.
Jeffrey's going to dress up as Sherlock Holmes.
I'm not.
We'll put the Deerstalker on Betsy.
Yeah, but yes, Betsy on the Deerstalker. Yes. I think that's a great idea, Mo. We'll do it.
I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, I'll get it together.
And I thought of it because we saved one of your programmes, didn't we, from your show?
We did, yes.
So one of the prizes may be a signed programme from the tour and the show. Amongst other fun goodies.
Yes. I've got all sorts of crime books and, you know,
books. It's going to be, there's a lot.
Lots of those. Sorry, I've left the microphone again because Betsy's campaigning for attention.
I said her name. That was a mistake. Can you go back to bed?
She's looking morose now.
Anyway, we better get going.
Yes, we should. This week, one of these were suggested by our long-time listener, Phil Brown. Because he knows of your love for poisoners.
Well, I mean, we're basically doing a poisoner every other week now because everybody, we've had more poisoner suggestions and Victorian suggestions. I'm very happy with that. So.
Well, it's quite interesting too in that it reveals just how dramatic some of these cases are.
Mm.
And this one is particularly dramatic. This is called The Prince of Poisoners.
Okay, well, here we go with the Prince of Poisons.
The Prince of Poisoners is a man called Dr. William Palmer. Dickens called him the greatest villain ever to have stood in the Old Bailey. He was born in August 1824 and died in June 1856 at the age of just 31. He was eventually convicted of just killing one person, his friend John Cook, in 1855. And he was executed in a public hanging in Stafford in 1856.
Gosh.
20,000 people turned up to the hanging.
I always thought the public execution popularity is very weird.
Well, he used strychnine and is also thought to have killed his brother, his mother-in-law and four of his children before the age of one. They all had convulsions, quote.
Sorry, he killed everyone before he was 1 year old.
No, the children before they were 1 year old.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, sorry, don't mean. And the reason for this profligacy was that Dr. William Palmer was a gambler, a very considerable gambler, and he was always in debt. So as we've noticed before about Victorian poisoners, it's often driven by the desire for the insurance money.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Classic.
Yeah. Well, let's begin at the beginning. Dr. Palmer, William, was the sixth of eight children to Sarah and Joseph Palmer. His father, Joseph, died when he was 12 in 1836. And he left his wife, Sarah, that is William Palmer's mother, a considerable amount of money, £70,000.
That's a lot of money.
In 1836.
Back then, that's like a lot of money.
That is a great deal of money. Many millions it would be equivalent to today. Palmer was quite an intelligent young man and rapidly went to train as a doctor in London. He was actually born in Stafford, in a place called Rugeley. And some people call him the Rugeley Poisoner, because he really didn't stray very far away from his native birthplace.
Mm-hmm.
He went back from London after training as a doctor in 1846, when he was 24, to practice. He married Anne Brooks, who was a little younger, 3 years younger than he was, on the 7th of October, 1847. Anne Brooks had actually, her real name was Thornton. She'd been the mistress of a well-known local colonel. She was obviously quite extravagant and very pretty by all accounts. Anyway, her mother-in-law, Anne Thornton, her real name, came to stay in 1849 and died he died 2 weeks later of apoplexy, in quotations. The whole story is littered with coincidences. In 1850, bear in mind, Dr. Palmer is still only 26, a man called Leonard Bladen died in Palmer's house, and he'd lent him money to bet on horses. Anyway, be that as it may. The children were born 1846 onwards. The first was actually also called William Palmer, and he was born in 1846, and believe it or not, lived to be 80. In 1926 he died.
He was the only one who made it past one.
I'm afraid so. The next four all died in infancy of, quotes, convulsions. So Elizabeth died in January 1851 at 2.5 months, Henry died in January 1852 at a month. Frank died in December 1852 at 7 hours. And John died in January 1854 at 3 or 4 days. All of convulsions.
That's awful.
Yes. By 1854, Palmer was heavily in debt. He was just 30. He'd taken out a large life insurance on his wife, Anne, £13,000.
With life insurance, though, don't you have to pay into it for them to pay it out?
Well, you can pay a lump sum, or you can take out a, you know, you don't have to pay in all the time for it to for them to pay
how
you.
How does it? How does...
Well, they assume you're going to live forever. They, you know, there's actuarial tables that say, oh, Molly Wansel's life expectancy is X years, and so we can.
So I could play £12 a month. And, but if I paid £12 a month and I insured my life for £1 million,
yes,
but then I died in 4 months, they'd still have to pay out £1 million,
well,
even though I only would have
paid. You reach a, that's a very, very good point, because he'd taken out this big life insurance on his wife, Anne, and then, believe it or not, she died in September 1854, shortly after he'd taken out the life insurance. So he didn't have to pay much in. They thought she died of cholera. There was an epidemic at the time. So remember, this is a doctor, a doctor's wife, hugely respected in the local area, a figure of some importance. People are not going to rush to the, you know, the police and say, well, there wasn't really a police force in the same way then, and say, we think he's poisoning people. It was a respectable man. He then took out a life insurance on his brother, Walter, who was a drunk. And he died in 1855. But this time, following your very insightful thought, the insurance company failed to pay up and they launched an investigation.
Fair enough.
Into Walter's death.
Bit dodgy.
At this time, William Palmer was having an affair with the housemaid, Eliza Tame. And in June 1855, she gave birth to his son, Alfred, as well as making further financial demands upon him. So, you have a man who is respectable, above suspicion, you would have thought, a prosperous doctor, but what the public don't know, or at least the people who respect him in the local area don't know, is that he is absolutely addicted to gambling on horses. All kinds of horses, all over the place. And it, in the end, comes down to a particularly strange occasion when his friend John Cook and he go to races together. They go to Shrewsbury races, which there were in those days. There's no race course left at Shrewsbury now. He decided to murder, this is Palmer, decided to murder Cook, who was a bit of a sickly young man, but did have a fortune of £12,000. Okay? Okay. So Palmer and Cook go to Shrewsbury races in November 1855. And by this time, Cook has begun to smell what might be described as a rat. He suggests to one or two people that Palmer's been dosing his gin.
Okay.
In fact, Palmer did poison Cook, but only after collecting his winnings. He collected his winnings from the bookmakers, and on the 21st of November 1855, Cook died about 1 o'clock in the morning, screaming in agony. It's a particularly vicious poisoning.
That's horrible.
Yes. But Palmer could not brush this one under the carpet, because Cook's stepfather turned up and demanded not only one inquest, but two inquests. Now, Palmer, up to this point, has been above suspicion. The two inquests were indeed conducted, but Palmer interfered in both of them, because a notable doctor, he wrote to the coroner requesting the death be classified as natural causes. I mean, he had no shame. He was absolutely determined that he was going to get away with it. And on the 15th of December, that the first inquest he interfered with, and the second inquest, the jury decided, as they could then, they can't now. Inquests now, the jury don't decide whether guilt of someone or not.
Mm.
But back then, we're talking about 1855, the jury decided and concluded that Cook had been poisoned by Dr. William Palmer. Had it not been for that jury, that inquest jury, it's entirely possible that Palmer would have got away with it completely.
Probably pushed it too far with that that one.
Yeah, because, I mean, he was incredibly popular. I mean, he was the sort of people who would, you know, go out of their way to see her. If they needed a doctor, he would be the person to be consulted. Doctor Poisoners, we will do Bodkin Adams one day, but, you know, they are a very interesting...
Well, Harold Shipman's not much different.
Not much, no. A great deal of trust in doctors.
Mm.
Anyway, he was Palmer was arrested on charges of murder of Cook and forgery because he'd been forging his mother's signature to pay off his debts. But it was decided, and this is another extraordinary element of this case, it was decided that Palmer could not be tried in Stafford because there were too many people who liked him. And believe it or not, it brought in an Act of Parliament. The Central Criminal Court Act was passed in 1856 to allow Palmer to be tried at the Old Bailey in London.
Is that still something that happens now?
It is. Yes, it does. It was felt, as I say, that Palmer couldn't get a fair trial in Stafford, where the detailed accounts of the deaths of his children had been published widely. In other words, circumstantial evidence.
Mm.
It would have, the jury pool, so to speak, would have been poisoned. But his popularity was another distinct fact in this case. So the Lord Chief Justice of the day insisted that he not be tried at Stafford Assizes. There was an Assizes in Stafford at that point. And that he'd come to London and be tried at the Old Bailey. The Home Secretary ordered the bodies of Anne, his mother-in-law, and Walter, his brother, to be exhumed. And there was found to be antimony, another poison,
in Anne's organs. The one they talked about last time.
Organs, yes. The prosecution painted Palmer a respectable, in fact, rather portly figure, even though he was only 31, quite sort of right, that Victorian gentleman look. You know, if you look him up, you'll find this wonderful, some portraits of him. As a desperate man, desperate for money, and knew he was doomed to a debtor's prison.
Well, it was worse than that.
Well, it was. However, the jury took just an hour to find him guilty of killing Cook, and the Lord Chief Justice placed the black cap on his head, the black cloth, and sentenced him to die. 20,000 people were at Stafford Prison to witness the public hanging of William Palmer. He went to his grave denying that he'd been guilty. And he was buried in a grave filled with quicklime.
To dissolve him.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Yes. His mother said, and I quote, "They've hanged my saintly Billy."
Oh, right. He killed his mother-in-law, but not his own mother.
Mother-in-law, yes. And it's said that that the phrase, what's your poison, in pubs, when you're asking someone what they like to drink, came from Palmer's case.
Oh, right, because he poisoned the gin. Oh, yes. That's quite good.
Yes. But I do think that's the most stunning case.
Yeah, that's amazing.
The Prince of Poisoners.
The Prince of Poisoners.
And the man that Dickens called, let me get it, read it again, the greatest villain ever to have stood in the Old Bailey. Crikey.
That's a good one.
So this was a man who hanged at 31, who'd killed certainly his mother-in-law, his brother, certainly probably killed four of his children. I mean, he knew no shame, whatever. No. Driven entirely, as is so often the case, by a desire for money. A particularly Victorian...
Well, that doesn't change.
No, not really. But it's somehow a very... Somehow
gambling
very,
addiction's got worse over lockdown and stuff, hasn't it?
Yes.
I was listening to an article about how it affects women more now than it used to.
What, lockdown?
No, gambling.
Oh, gambling, yes. Oh,
because
very good
of, like, bingo sites and...
Yeah, there's several good pieces about that this week.
Yeah,
because
there was
they
a
mean,
big thing about it, wasn't there?
Yeah. But there you have the Rugeley poisoner, Dr. William Palmer, for which we have to thank Phil. Because it was...
Thanks, Phil.
Really, it's a classy... It's a very interesting case.
Yeah.
I mean, considering how young he was... And how many people he'd clearly killed.
It's so weird that people don't, when they poison, you know, that's where you get the biggest, like, numbers of deaths, don't you? Like, for serial killers, poison or doctors, angels of death, doctors of death, they're always the highest body counts.
Yes, yes. It really takes quite a lot of time and trouble to... whatever your method of killing may be, strangulation or guns
the
or
poisoning things,
with knives and all that. But
you feel detached from it, I guess.
I don't know.
It's weird.
But I've always thought of poison as being principally a female crime. But this is a very male crime, isn't it?
We've had two men in the last.
Yes.
Two.
Yeah. But I think it's a fabulous, it's a very, very interesting case. And I love the idea of what's your poison coming, you know, from...
Yeah, that's a good one.
From Dr. Palmer.
What's your poison?
Yeah. Because he obviously was. It was the gin. He was probably poisoning the gin for everybody. We can't for the children.
Not for the babies. Mm. But yes, the gin. You'd think you wouldn't taste it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's probably it.
But... He could tell.
He didn't just use strychnine. He did use antimony as well. But mm-hmm. Yeah. And everybody thought they were all natural causes.
Well,
mind you, the infant mortality rate was very high.
Yeah, there was a lot more natural death and shorter lifespan.
Shorter lifespan. And people were taken.
And people did die of convulsions and chest infections, breathing, this, that, and the other, shivers.
Yes.
All sorts.
The ague.
Yeah.
You know, all of the above.
Paroxysms of agony.
Yeah. So it wasn't, I mean, death, nowadays any death, particularly unexplained, is viewed with a certain amount of suspicion, but there was so much.
Well,
death.
Also they do a toxicology report. Mm. But they don't, they didn't do then.
But they, nevertheless, they did find poison in his mother-in-law's body when it was exhumed. Unfortunately, Walter's body was too far gone or whatever.
Why did they put him in quicklime? Did they not want people to dig him up?
I think so, yes. He was very notorious, the height of notoriety. I mean, that's why 20,000 people turned up at his hanging. He was an incredibly... famous figure.
It would have been all over the press, wouldn't it?
Yes. And you finish thinking about this case and you shake your head.
Mm.
You know, we've often talked about that people can be respectable and villains at the same time.
Oh, yes.
But
lots of times
he was a very respected and respectable man in his community. he was, if you like, the shipman figure of his day.
Big time.
Isn't he?
Yeah, big time.
Mm.
Well, thanks, Dad.
Well, I don't. It does suit your taste for poisoners, so, darling.
It does. It really does. And my taste for Victorians.
Yeah.
I do.
Actually, it's very good to do those. I find it very interesting. It's very, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
What? There's something wonderfully dramatic about it, you know.
Yeah, it feels like it's not really real, I suppose, in a way. Sometimes.
And yet, of course, it is.
Mm.
You know.
Very much so. Just a different time.
Yes, it reminds me to do Bodkin Adams.
Yeah, we'll have to do more. People get bored of Victorian poisoners if we're not careful.
Well, Bodkin Adams is not a Victorian. I've done a couple of films about Bodkin Adams. It's very interesting. Very, very interesting.
Well, we'll do that one.
It ended up with two Rolls Royces.
It's two Rolls Royces.
Both given to him by patients.
Very impressive. It's in the wrong line of work.
Yes, right, clearly. He lived in a house in Eastbourne.
Oh, nice.
So we shall return to Dr. Bodkin Adams.
Bodkin.
One of the most sensational trials of the 1930s.
Hmm. Have you got any plans in your coming week?
I'm going to do Cambridge, remember? I'm going to Gonville and Caius, Cambridge.
Oh, yeah.
To talk to the, I think it's the theology department.
About crime.
Crime, yes.
The morality of crime.
Morality and all of that.
It will hark
I've suggested, back to yours. I've suggested some, you know, I've said you could, these are some possibilities. I'm happy to talk about anything in this area, which I'm looking forward to.
Probably have a Q&A, will they?
Yeah, I think so. It's about 2 hours worth.
And
after supper.
That will be interesting.
So that's really, I mean, I've got lots of other different things, but that's a sort of, I agreed to this a long time ago.
The big thing.
It's interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
Good.
Because we've talked about it a lot, you know, and it's worth raising again now. Does the fact that we make a podcast about true crime glamorise crime?
I don't think so.
Pause for thought there.
Yes. I don't think so, but I do understand how it could look that way.
Mm. I think any information about what drives people is very instructive for all sorts of other reasons. Now, you could say that it makes you very suspicious.
Yeah, I think it depends on your disposition, your attitude towards people and how you've been treated in life.
Yes. I hope it makes people a bit more cautious. We've talked about it so many times. People are so trusting.
Yeah, you have to be cautious.
You know, and it's very...
But you don't want to constantly live in fear or think that all people are bad either.
No, you don't, but...
You just need to be sensible.
I think it's, again, a matter of sense, common sense and caution, isn't it?
But also sometimes it's just wildly unfair.
Oh, yes. Wrong place, wrong time.
And very tragic. And it's
absolutely.
Not,
and there's no nothing, rhyme or reason for that.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
It's important to tell the story, especially if we try to remember the people who lost their lives or the families of those people who did.
Yes. As I was saying, I met the mother of Libby Squire.
Oh, yeah, you told me that.
Who is actually now campaigning to meet her daughter's murderer. I'm not sure that's going to be a good idea, but nevertheless she is.
But that's not, you know, that's what I mean. It's down to a person's disposition. Like, you, if that's part of your healing process, then
yes,
that's part of your
then
healing
it is.
Process.
Then it, there it is. But it's very... instructive, and as you know, I'm increasingly preoccupied by the impact that any crime, particularly murder, has on the family and the friends of the individual who ends up as a victim. because so often they're forgotten. And I do feel very strongly that the impact is far beyond simply the one person who may have died. Mm. It ripples, spread, and people changed forever by something like that. It's, yeah. It's genuinely frightening. So let's think of something cheerful, Mo. That's a bit of a gloomy thought.
It went a bit sad there, didn't it?
Yeah, forgive me.
No, it's fine. It's where it's naturally.
Are you doing something cheerful this week?
I don't have many plans, but I'm sure it won't be.
No, I'm sure.
I'm not going to be talking about murder the whole time.
Oh, no, I'm good. That's a relief.
Just seeing clients mainly.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to, you know, get back into the routine of an ordinary week, which has been...
Doesn't involve sitting in the back of a car.
Or front of a car.
Yeah, or front of a car.
Yeah. Doesn't involve the motorways of Britain.
In a car, generally.
Yeah. I wrote a piece about it for the Garrick newsletter.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Well, thanks, Dad, for that. And thank
Pleasure.
You, Phil. For suggesting that very interesting topic. Thank you to all the people who help us, our producer Sam Brain, my brother Dan who did the music, my friend George who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey because he does all the hard work, and to you the listeners, thank you very much.
Thank you all very much, and of course thank you to Molly who thought this idea up in the first place. And as I often say, do please be careful out there.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.